Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show at the Hot Stove Society here in downtown Seattle. This is Chef Tom Douglas. We have a lively audience this morning. They're just waiting on a breakfast sandwich. They know they won't get fed if they don't clap.
That's right. It's right. Part of their penance.
Chef in the Chapeau is on vacation still in Peru. Hopefully he's eating a lot of potatoes. And what else would you get in Peru? I told him I thought he would find great Japanese food in Peru.
Yes, that's what we debated last week. I think he's going to find a nice Michelin-starred restaurant, and that's what he's going to love.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I'm chef owner of several of Seattle's restaurants, in case you're a first-time listener. And if you ever want to come join us in the audience, it's just go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets. It's $15, inclusive of breakfast. We're an inclusive group here.
That's right. Yeah. Everyone's welcome. And I'm Katie O, your co-host today. Just the two of us, mm-hmm. you and I. And I'm the marketing director at Molly Moon's Homemade Ice Cream.
There you go.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did offer the audience a total refund of their $15 if they didn't want to stay because the chef is, you know, the chefy chef is not here.
That's right. But most of them had had coffee, so then they already really kind of used their $15 and have to stay now.
All right. So we got a big show today. We're going to decide what you should be baking to celebrate this spring. Can you believe spring is already 1 month over?
Kind of. I mean, it's looking fantastic outside. Yeah. So, yeah, I believe it. I'm there.
All right. Brittany Bartleben is going to be here for the Baker's Corner. Katie O's on the go. You headed to hotcakes.
That's right.
You know, I'm an investor in hotcakes.
You know what? I did know that. That's not why we're going, but I love hotcakes. It's one of those staples that I always have in my freezer, along with ice cream, of course. But love those little molten lava cakes, and Sarah and I are heading over there.
Were you just going because it sounded fun, or you were?
Well,
you
yes,
just want me
of
to
course.
Pay for it? Is that really
no?
What it's
you're
all
not
about?
Even. You're not paying for a thing. Oh, we're okay. just heading over there because it sounds like fun, and okay. I rarely get over to Ballard, so I'm excited.
There you go. You know, there's one on the hill too. We're making a meal out of what's in your fridge. And, of course, our intention is to battle each other in tasty trivia.
That's right.
Traditionally, for me to win.
Do you feel like that's tradition at this point?
No, I think everyone in our audience and our listening audience out there would probably like for me to win.
Yeah, well, we always love it when you win. We like it when you're in a good mood at the end of the show.
Why do I always lose then?
I don't know. I think you have to have some soul searching.
Ordinary to extraordinary.
Ordinary to extraordinary. That is usually where you and your friend Thierry, though he's not here today, take some ordinary dishes and make them extraordinary. So you are on your own to make things magical.
No problem.
Okay. The first one is loaded baked potato. Yep. I love a loaded baked potato.
Me too. Do you like them sweet or do you like a russet?
I like a russet. I like a classic russet with classic toppings. Mm-hmm. But, you know,
they're classic toppings. No, yeah.
Classic toppings. But I would say you're going to make it extraordinary. And there's always the big question. Do I rub the outside with olive oil? Do I cover it in some? There's like a lot of.
That's a big question. I've never heard that question.
You've never heard that question when you're sticking a baked potato in after you give it a couple of pokey pokes with a fork?
No.
Okay.
Here's what I say about baked potatoes. You barely can overcook them.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm a skin man. Are you a skin?
Of course, yeah.
And I like that skin super crunchy and delicious.
Me
and
too.
So hot oven for a very long time. Even if it dehydrates the potato inside, it's all the better.
Exactly. It's so soft and luscious that way.
If my choice, I would just end up with skin, just that roasted skin, and all the potato would kind of stick to it and become crunchy with the skin.
Frankly, we could stick a baked potato in now, and by the time we all get home from work, be ready.
Now you've taken it over.
Is that too far? Yeah. That's too far.
But
okay.
The point is,
it is 9 a.m. when we're taping.
The point is, you don't always have to add stuff on top to have it be a better, a more exceptional baked potato. Sometimes it's just the process of cooking them that I think people are a little scared of. Wrapping them in foil and putting them in the oven is not a good
way
to make a baked potato. And that's so many steakhouses in town, they do that, and that's how they serve their baked potatoes. And they come out with that kind of soft, misty skin. I just don't like it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'll certainly eat it, but I don't like it. But as far as going extraordinary, I agree with you. I think some sort of delicious cultured butter, some sort of delicious sea salt.
Mm-hmm.
Try baking them best, you know, like with that crunchy skin, and then just getting rid of all the other stuff.
Yeah.
I think they get overloaded. And just go butter, salt, and pepper.
Yum.
And a lot of butter.
A lot of butter.
And then when you think you put a lot of butter on, add more.
You know what I like to do sometimes? Eat the center and then put more butter on the skin. There's never too much. It starts getting a little nerve-wracking at mm-hmm. some point. You're like, I am not doing anything good for myself. But you are, because it's so good for the soul.
Yeah, but once you put sour cream and green onions and bacon and cheddar cheese and all that kind of stuff on top, mm-hmm. it's a meal, and that's fine. It's one way to have it. I don't think it makes it extraordinary. Mm. Personally.
All right. I like where your head's at. Tom, how do you make an ordinary shrimp stir fry extraordinary?
Well, at home, it's different than at the restaurant, right?
Sure.
So at home, I think any stir fry you can make it extraordinary by taking your time, getting that wok super hot, and then cooking your pieces as parts of your stir fry, mm-hmm. and then cooking them and getting the sear, and then getting them out of the pan. Because by the time you put in all your stuff, if you put it in all at one time, you're going to steam your wok-seared vegetables.
Yeah, you're not
stir-frying. Instead of searing them, right?
That's right.
So just get
your
process done with each of your ingredients. Get your velvetized shrimp going. Just a little bit of cornstarch and just sitting there. You can add a little mirin to it or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then cook your shrimp separately also. Now you've got all your ingredients. And now you can go back into the pan with your sauce, right?
What kind of sauce do you like for your stir fry?
For me, I don't love a big sticky sauce. Sometimes you'll start with a little chicken stock, some garlic, some ginger, some black beans.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll slurry it up with a cornstarch slurry. To me, even in fried rice or any sort of stir fry, I would rather just go in with my crispy chili paste, my fermented black beans on their own, not necessarily a sauce. And then I use fish sauce or soy sauce for my salt.
You like the umami flavors in your stir fry.
Yeah, but I think you have to have enough salt.
Mm-hmm.
But fish sauce works just like soy sauce does, and to me gives it a little bit more organic flavor.
You know what?
It doesn't
always
come off as salty.
Yeah, you know what else I really just begrudge all the time is how sweet people make their stir fries.
Oh. That's the American palate. I mean,
right?
Yeah.
Just so much sweetness, so much sugar, mm-hmm. even if you don't know that you're using sugar. Maybe there's a corn syrup or whatever that you're getting from the store, so avoid it.
We can go back to this a little bit. Later in the show, we have a little chat about food things that people like or dislike. And that's one of the things that we're going to talk about today is that crispy gone soft.
Yes.
And I kind of thought that was an interesting way to this. You know, we'll get to that
later in the show.
Up next. Whew. That first segment went by so quickly.
It did.
Are Seattle restaurants too loud? Are they?
Yeah.
What's the best food texture? We're discussing that and more during our Food in the News on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. Big article about restaurants in the Seattle Times and about has the noise level peaked in Seattle restaurants?
Yeah.
And I can tell you over the years of my experience with this, I've had the Dahlia for 30 years now, and the Dahlia has been pretty consistent over the years as far as the noise level goes. And as a matter of fact, the Seattle Times even mentions the Dahlia as being one of Seattle's quietest restaurants. But in my years of dining out and about all over the world, it's mostly New York that drove the noisy restaurant, or L.A., I would say, and it became so popular, and it still is somewhat popular. What do you think about quiet dining compared to noisy dining compared to so noisy you can't hear yourself think or talk to your guests?
Right. I have definitely had dining experiences where I'm leaving and I'm a little bit hoarse because I've had to kind of shout all night to my dinner companions, and that can be a bit much. I mean, there's a fine line between the hustle and bustle and kind of the excitement of going out, which I think is what you're referring to when you mm-hmm. think of like LA and New York restaurants, is that scene that sometimes people are going out to dinner for. But like this article by Joel Leitner says in the Seattle Times, more often I'm getting questions about where can I go to have a good conversation and dinner and not shout. And, you know, people have hearing problems, frankly, where it's difficult to listen to one particular voice in a sea of many voices and dishes and the echo effect in the room.
Now, I don't want you to take this the wrong way.
What?
But do you think part of this It's just that you're getting older.
I definitely think I'm getting older. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I can't fight the progress of time. Mm-hmm. When we started working together, I was, you know, just a young pup in my early 20s. But
Sarah, Sarah's our, I guess, even from you, a different generation now.
She is a different generation. And,
I am the current young pup in her early 20s.
And what do you think
20s.
About
I definitely think that there have been occasions where I walk into a restaurant with friends and it is pretty loud. And it is noticeable. Like, sometimes if you have to, like, yell or lean in really close to a friend to be able to hear them at a restaurant, mm-hmm. it seems like it's pretty loud in there.
Yeah. Should that be left to a bar scene, do you think? Or is it okay that restaurants that are kind of bar heavy or bar centric, even though they serve food, can be loud? Or do you have a thought on?
Yeah, it doesn't bother me too much. I've found that most of the non-bar-centric restaurants, I find, still aren't quite as loud to me. Like, they're still at an all right level. Mm-hmm. It's when you get to those more bar-centric ones that they're louder. And it is kind of expected to me. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm just of the generation where I'm like, oh, you know, well, that's just what a restaurant
right.
is like, I guess.
But I would say, like, even with the restaurants they mentioned, Dahlia Lounge, Nell's, Canlis, I think of Cafe Juanita being the same way, too. I think part of what lends their kind of feeling like it's a fancy special night out is it's a little bit quieter. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that there's a whole ambient thing going on, and this article does a nice job of pointing out why some restaurants are a bit quieter, and it has to do with the decor, it has to do with the carpeting, it has to do with the linens on the table. All those things really contribute to a different dining experience altogether.
And quite literally, it has to do with the architecture of the space,
right?
So if you look at Dahlia, I mean, we are in... here we're above Lola, right? A very popular restaurant. It can get so noisy down there. But it's still an old building. Like, Dahlia is an old building right across the street. And if you look at the difference in the noise level, it is twice as loud, three times as loud
right.
at Lola. And we are just surrounded by these hardscapes, right? These windows.
Mm-hmm.
Hardwood floor. And a lot
huge
of air.
High,
yeah,
huge high
very
ceilings.
Narrow. And so Dahlia, on the other hand, has these banquettes, and it's got wood ceilings, which soak up a lot
mm-hmm.
of noise.
Mm-hmm.
It's got carpet on the floor. It has upholstered chairs, you know, things like that, that people don't realize how much of that soaks up noise.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But all these new buildings where these restaurants are going in is really kind of where some of the issues are, because restaurateurs are not taking into account. They'll say, well, if it's an issue, I'll take care of it after we open.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you got these piecemealed solutions put together, panels hanging from the ceiling, you know, just weird efforts to calm down the noise.
That's right.
But there was a time, and I would say it's over the last 10 or 15 years, that I feel like restaurateurs felt you couldn't make a restaurant too loud.
Yeah.
And I do think that there's some age issue there. As people age out of that noise level, they want a little quieter. Maybe they don't, like you said, maybe they don't hear as well.
Yeah.
But I just think it's somewhat of an age gap issue.
Mm. All right. Let's talk about what we teased in the last segment a little bit, which is textures.
Mm-hmm.
Crispy gone soggy.
Mm-hmm.
I really loved this article. Did you enjoy this one,
I
Tom?
Did. So this is out of Bon Appetit. Is that what it's
mm-hmm.
from?
Yeah. Bon Appetit.
And she describes the fact that her favorite food texture is things that have been crispened up, kind of like a crispy chicken parm,
uh-huh.
which is then lathered in tomato sauce and cheese,
mm-hmm.
So it goes soggy, right? I don't know.
You don't know?
Well,
even
I certainly like
huge...
chicken parm.
Yeah.
And I like that thing, but is that something I crave? That's, I mean, she literally craves it. Now, when I have it, the times that I think it's just a little bit weird, it's like, say, when you do tempura prawns in a bowl of udon, like you see at all Japanese restaurants.
See,
right?
Now,
they
I
put that
love
broth
that.
Right over top the fried shrimp, and it's a soggy little mess. And no, it's not my favorite. I like the chicken parm,
uh-huh.
where you have that thicker viscosity of the tomato sauce rather than the thin broth.
I was going to say, you love a chicken fried steak.
No,
there
exactly.
are certain things that kind of maintain its crispy texture. But I did think about you because another one they pointed out, which I know you hate, is poutine. And poutine
mm-hmm.
has that other quality of something very crispy
mm-hmm.
that is much beloved because it's been doused in kind of a wetter style gravy, generally speaking, and it goes a little sogged out.
I'm not sure I dislike poutine for that so much. I just find it gross.
Oh, okay. Just
not sure
a simple
it's a crispy, soggy
gross.
Thing. It's just it's like putting your face
uh-huh.
into a big pile of fat.
All right.
And I don't know about that. I love gravy.
Uh-huh.
And I love it on dressing, and I like it. But do I want it on my fries? I know I'm much in the minority on this.
It's okay.
I like nachos.
And do you like chilaquiles? That's another thing cited in this.
Yeah, that's a little different, right? Yeah, that's more of a baked situation where you've got the salsa and the sauce over top.
I will say, though, I was thinking about this. Actually, before I read this article, I was having a conversation about our favorite dishes in town. And one of mine is from Tsukushinbo, and it is the deep-fried Japanese eggplant that they do a nice crosshatch on, and then they pour that really hot dashi over it. And that, to me, is such a beautiful texture. It's not quite like a deep-fried, battered tempura, right? It's more that the frying kind of makes this eggplant extra, extra silky, and it's super luscious in that broth.
If I'm going to have greasy fried eggplant like that, because that eggplant's like a sponge, right?
It's just going to soak up. That's all it is.
If I want that, I'm going to go up to Poppy up on Capitol Hill
and get those
eggplant fries that they make with a little bit of, I think it's a honey drizzle or something.
It's a honey drizzle, and then they put a little flake sea salt on top. Those are really good.
That's probably my favorite fried eggplant dish. Like, you go to some of these places like Panda Express or some of the local chains, I can't remember their names right off the top, but and they do that where they deep fry the eggplant and then they put the sticky sauce on
top.
Oh my God, that is so gross.
I agree.
But I do, when I get started eating them, it's hard to stop.
Yeah.
Gross, but...
Gross, but here you are.
But here I am talking about it.
That's right.
All right. So we didn't get to whether or not the milk, we're going to ditch milk as a society and just go to oat milk and almond milk.
Yep.
But the dairy farmers apparently are feeling the squeeze on people changing their milk habits. Katie O, you're on the go this week.
You're heading
to Hotcakes to see what they're cooking up for the spring season on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. It's time for our KDO On The Go segment.
That's
took Sarah along with you,
That's
our producer.
Right.
What made you pick out a trip to Hotcakes?
Because sweet things are fun. Dessert is fun. And this is a staple that I love. I think I said this earlier. I love to have it in my freezer at all times. These little frozen molten lava cakes. You can find them in the grocery store. And it is just such a decadent treat to be able to pull it from your freezer, pop it in the oven, and have a beautiful dessert. So Sarah and I decided that we would head over to Ballard, where their main kitchen is, and go see how they're made.
Hopefully you spend a lot of money, because I am an investor.
We will.
Let's listen.
Oh my gosh, Sarah, I am finally KDO on the going out at Hotcakes in Ballard, and I am so lucky to be joined by Colin Buchanan, the chef of Hotcakes. Hi, Colin.
Hi, thanks for coming.
Oh my gosh, it is a total and complete pleasure to meet you, as we were saying off air. I don't often make it to Ballard, but this is completely and totally worth it because you are rolling out your new spring menu. Is that right?
Yeah, we launched it about mid-March, so March 14th, and we're going till June, and then we'll launch our summer menu.
As I like to tell Tom, because he always reminds us that he's an investor in Hotcakes, is that I love to keep the little frozen guys in my freezer at all times. I'm so happy that I can find those at every single grocery store. But for those who are maybe familiar with the product on the shelves, coming to the chocolate cakery is a completely different experience. So can you kind of describe to our listeners what you're about in this actual retail space?
Yeah, definitely. So the Ballard location is our first location. We opened in 2012. And it's just got a very, I feel like, Ballard, homey vibe. It's very cozy. We got exposed brick, you know, wood beams. And the menu is, it's very decadent. It's very adult. We have boozy milkshakes, which are always fun. Various cocktails that change up. And it's just kind of, if you want to come treat yourself, this is where you want to go.
This is 100% where I used to treat myself. I used to go to a little yoga studio down the way, and afterwards I was like, well, I burned a lot of calories, so I would come on the weekends and get the most decadent treats and yank all of my friends with me. I'm like, I know you want to shuttle off to the next thing, but we got to split a milkshake, or we have to have a little bit of this or a little bit of that. So you mentioned the spring menu. What is on your spring menu right now?
Yeah, so spring is always, for me, a super fun time. It's a little challenging because you're coming out of winter, but you're not quite in summer. So because we like to be as seasonal and local as focused, there's kind of limited ingredients to work with. So, of course, rhubarb, which is actually one of my favorite ingredients. I ate it as a kid growing up all the time. We had a bush in my backyard, so it's just very homey, very comforting. It's also a big like story of hotcakes. They have kind of always had a rhubarb bread pudding on their menu, and so we wanted to keep with that tradition. But this year we kind of spiced it up a little bit, made it a little more adult, and did a rhubarb rosé sauce with it, which is really fun. It kind of brings it, like brightens it up a little bit. And then one of our other seasonal items that I'm super excited about is our honeycomb sage stacked bar. So it's a sage mousse, a layer of chocolate ganache with candied almonds, a lemon cake, and then fresh honeycomb and candied honeycomb on it.
OMG, that sounds really good. Sarah is like shaking her head like, yes, that is definitely the thing that I want. You also do shakes. You were saying boozy shakes, but then seasonal shakes as well.
We do. Every month we change our vegan shake of the month. So right now we're at chamomile caramel with our vegan caramel. It's really nice, really refreshing, but still very decadent, very hot cakes. And then our seasonal milkshake that'll be on until June is toasted caramel popcorn, which is really fun. It just kind of gets you in that vibe of, like, it's almost summer. You're going to start, like, going outside, campfire, kind of getting your popcorn on, so.
See, and that's why I personally love to come to the shop, because there are just certain things that you can't get at the grocery store all the time, particularly these seasonals. Speaking of just in terms of the vegan shake, so I work at Molly Moon's, and one of the biggest things that we're always getting asked, like, vegan ice cream, like, people kind of do this cringy face. But I feel like in terms of vegan foods, sweets are really where vegan kind of goes into the realm where you don't even really notice or miss the fact that there's any animal products involved.
Definitely. It's I feel like that's definitely one of the biggest challenges, is we want to make it taste just as awesome as everything else. We don't want you to try and be like, oh, this is a vegan shake. It's just like, damn, this is good.
Yeah.
So we're lucky we get to work with Frankie and Joe's, so we get their brown sugar vanilla as our base, and then we kind of just get to manipulate from there.
So word on the street is that you're still fairly new to the hotcakes team. You've been here for about 6 months. So what were you doing before you were concocting all these great creations?
I graduated culinary school from Seattle Central about 8 years ago now. It's kind of hard to believe. It's a great culinary program, by the way. If anyone's looking, I highly recommend it. Super amazing chefs, amazing location. But yeah, I kind of bounced around from restaurants for a little while after that, just trying to find where I wanted to be. They kind of said, if you're not learning, get out. So I kind of just moved around trying to find inspiration. And about 3.5 years ago, I landed with Salt and Iron in Edmonds. It's owned by Schubert Ho and Andrew Leckie, who own Bar Dojo and Feed Me Hospitality. And the brand new restaurant, it started, and they're looking for a pastry chef to come on and kind of grow in their dessert program. So I was there for 3 years, just kind of expanding, growing, playing. It was a super, super fun, super great place to work. And then I was just like, you know, I kind of want to find a place that's a little more dessert-focused. I love restaurants. I love working for them, but it's always a little, like, bittersweet to be, like, not the afterthought, but just the last thing at the meal, which is great. The guests leave with that, but sometimes they get too full and they don't get to enjoy. So it's nice to be at a place where people come in to actually eat what you made.
It is nice to think that people are coming specifically to have a nice little sweet moment with their friends or with their family members.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh my gosh, Colin, everything just came to the table, and I'm so glad that I skipped lunch. I think I'm going to have a major sugar rush. What is in front of us?
Yeah, so right here we've got the sage honeycomb stacked bar. It's a sage mousse, candied almond ganache, and a lemon cake. This is our house-made honey caramel that we're actually currently selling in our retail section for a limited time only. It's super delicious, a little more floral and lighter than our other caramels. And then it has candied honeycomb and fresh honeycomb on top. This is our toasted caramel popcorn milkshake. So it's a infused milk with toasted popcorn. and then blended into a Bluebird vanilla ice cream with some of our dry burnt caramel and then caramelized popcorn pieces throughout and on top. And this is our rhubarb bread pudding. We have bread pudding that's made with rhubarb. The bread's from Grand Central. It's a potato bread. Super delicious, super moist, flavorful. Slow roasted rhubarb in the oven, and then a rhubarb rosé syrup over top.
Oh my gosh, these things look amazing. And Sarah's going to take photos and put it on our Facebook page, Seattle Kitchen, so everyone can be jealous and a little envious of what I'm about to dig into. But while I'm snacking on these delicious treats, Colin, where does your inspiration come from? Tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, so I grew up actually north of Bellingham, a small town called Everson. My family was always like art and food focused. So my mom's a visual artist, and every meal we had was always home cooked. They made all their pies, pizza dough. So I kind of grew up with everything from scratch, everything kind of slow method, which I think fits perfectly with hotcakes, which is why I actually was really drawn to hotcakes, is it's let's take the artisan approach, let's take the slow method and kind of really value our ingredients. And with that, I just kind of usually start with the flavors that interests me. I really like kind of the savory apothecary flavors, which is also like perfect on par with hotcakes, like the sage, something you wouldn't always find in a dessert, but I think it's interesting to take those ingredients and kind of twist them on their heads a little bit.
Have you always been a sweet tooth?
I have. I feel like I appreciate dessert obviously a lot more now and I'm a little pickier, but I remember I studied abroad in Dublin in college and I went to France with my mom. And I walked into this little patisserie shop in a small town, like, outside of Paris, and I just, like, fell in love with how beautiful everything was, just, like, the artistry that went with it. And it was kind of, I think, that moment that, like, pastry as an art form, as a career, kind of, like, stuck in my head.
I have to say, I'm trying to be both engaged in this conversation with you and also eating what has been put in front of me. And I just got to say that if anyone is in Ballard and they are able to get down to this shop, this caramel sauce, is it, that is made out of the honey? Incredible. So good and really unlike any other caramel that I've had before. It's really delicious.
Yeah, it's. I'm super excited that we brought it back, and I'm a little sad that it's only going to be on our retail shelf for like a few months, but it's fabulous.
Get it while the getting is good. Sarah, should we dig in?
I think so.
Okay. All right, coming up next, we are going to be talking about Washington asparagus. You're listening to Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.
It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. We're in it here at the Hot Stove Society, downtown Seattle. I'm Chef Tom Douglas, owner of several of Seattle's fine restaurants, including Lola right below us.
Delicious.
Or if you're
breakfast.
Heading up for one of the Broadway shows happening at the Paramount, check in at the Carlisle. Right across the street from the Paramount Theater.
That's right.
Okay, Katie O.
Yes?
I have tasted the fruit of spring.
Oh, I know.
I'm not really sure it's fruit.
It's not really a fruit, but I know how much you love this harbinger of spring.
I know, exactly. To me, it's really much more so than rhubarb. I'm not the biggest rhubarb fan, but it's all you got in February.
So you'll take
rhubarb,
it.
So
yeah,
I'll take it.
You'll take
but
it.
But right now, popping out of the ground in eastern Washington, just the tips right now, fresh Washington asparagus.
Whew.
So I thought we would take a second and just talk about, I'm having an asparagus breakfast sandwich this morning. You know, we do a breakfast sandwich for all these nice folks who join us. And today's veggie sandwich is an asparagus sandwich.
Yes, so. I always appreciate that is the seasonal treat of the breakfast sandwich world is what vegetables are in season. Sometimes we're doing mushrooms. Right now it's asparagus. In the summer you get that big juicy slice of tomato from your farm. But asparagus, very exciting stuff. You see it year-round. And you try to avoid it because why? Why bother?
Right.
And here it is now from our state.
Now we have 6 to 8 weeks of local stuff. And if you keep your asparagus, your personal asparagus season, because we all have our personal seasons for things, there's areas that we can choose to eat it when it's local and when it's time. And or you could eat asparagus all year long, as we
you
know.
Could, yeah.
But I choose not to.
Mm-hmm.
I choose this 6 to 8 weeks as my time. And then I appreciate it more when it shows up and I'm sad and ready for it to go after 8 weeks of intensity.
I think that's the most fun thing is you're so excited those first couple weeks. And then at some point you're like, I have reached my quota on this particular vegetable, which is fine. And then you move into a new season. When you get that first beautiful Washington asparagus, what is your ideal asparagus dish?
Well, let's start just a little bit before that, because I'm sad to watch how people clean asparagus. I think that so often they take their $4, you know, in the beginning of the season, it's $4 or $5 a pound, and they take it and they have been taught to kind of break it, and where it's tender enough, it naturally breaks. And so you end up putting a third of your hard-earned cash in the compost bin. And I don't think it's right.
Yeah.
I think it's sad to me. And so what I would suggest that you do is you take it and you take that, say, the last 2 inches, unless it's all white. You know, sometimes you'll get stuff that's all white, but most of the stuff in the store has been trimmed to green.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take that last 2 inches and you peel it first and then just cut off a piece and put it in your mouth and chew it. If it's not stringy, it's good, right?
Right.
It just doesn't have the peel on the outside. And you have saved literally 9/10 of what you were throwing away before. So that's an old wives' tale, I think, is snapping it where it naturally wants to break and then throwing away the rest.
Yeah, and if you're the type that likes to peel your asparagus anyway, you're going to see pretty quickly where that stem gets a little dried out.
Mm-hmm.
And like you're saying, you don't
Check it with a peeler first.
Mm-hmm. Check it with a peeler.
My favorite dish, to your question, and last night I had the charcoal grill up and making Maui meat. Do you ever eat Maui meat?
No,
kind of
I don't.
Hula hula style short ribs or flank steak.
Oh, yes. I don't know that we ever called it Maui meat in my family, but yeah.
Well, you know, years ago, A&J Meats up on the top of Queen Anne used to have bins of Maui, what they called Maui meats. So
yeah.
M-A-U-I-E, right, from the islands.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Deep sigh.
I made that. So my point was, right alongside of my short ribs that I had frozen last summer in my freezer, they've been sitting on that marinade, I did grilled asparagus. Just fat suckers.
Yeah.
I love those big, thick asparagus spears on the charcoal grill.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
there's enough sugar, natural sugar in the asparagus to caramelize super quickly on the grill.
Mm.
And to me, that is my dreamboat way of having just some sea salt and lemon juice, and you're done.
There's really pretty much every application that good asparagus can be put in is great, in my opinion. Like, even just a simple steamed asparagus sometimes, as you're seeing in the breakfast sandwiches today, it can really go kind of anywhere and really brighten things up.
The first time I ever had asparagus with hollandaise, which in my mind is kind of a classic, was
if Terry was here, he'd be talking about
At the Hotel DuPont in Wilmington, Delaware, my first cooking job.
How old were you?
I was 17, and it was the kind of place, I was a cook's helper, made $1 an hour, and you'd go into the basement and get your uniform on with my big paper toque and my white uniform, and that was in the Brandywine room, which was where I was the cook's helper. That was the specialty of the house in the spring, was asparagus with hollandaise sauce. And I'll never lose that kind of texture-flavor combination in my whole life, because hollandaise, made correctly, is really not very eggy. It's more, it's just about butter.
Buttery,
right?
And a little bit lemony.
A little lemony, a little salt. We always put a little Tabasco in there to get a little prick in the back of your throat.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's a classic combination that I just loved. More recently, I've had more raw asparagus salads. Things like that.
Shaved raw asparagus salads. I see that a lot as well.
I like it fine.
You like it fine.
I like it fine.
You know, I love just a good old blanched asparagus, honestly. I mean, of course, if you've got the grill going, so delicious to get that char. In some ways, I love the flavor of roasted, like a hot roasted asparagus, but I've been eating roasted vegetables, you know, all throughout the winter and fall, that there's something about that cold, shocked asparagus when it's still verdant and green. I just love it. I can't get enough of it.
The other thing that's simple to do, especially when you're coming home from work and you're ready to go, maybe you've got bread ends in the freezer so you can make some delicious little garlicky croutons. But to do an asparagus Caesar is one angle. Get rid of the lettuce and do an asparagus Caesar style. Or if you have a potato, I will gently saute a little onion, saute the potato till it's done, put in the asparagus for the last minute, mm-hmm. 1 minute, because I want it to stay green, and then just add chicken broth, and you've got soup that way, or pour that. If you add more asparagus, say one potato as your thickener to a pound of asparagus, then you just pop it into the Vitamix or your blender, your KitchenAid, and puree that into a creamy soup with a warm, crunchy garlic croutons.
Mm. Whoa.
And your potato is your thickener, so it just comes out velvety rather than, say, using cream as your thickener, which to me comes out over-rich, and it's like you don't feel good after eating that kind of soup.
I will say that the audience here, I hear giggles because this sounds so good to them. I'm assuming that's what the giggling is about.
Well, I think croutons are a funny, easy thing to do, and mm-hmm. if you just take them to the size of your spoon or less, it's like when you try to put big things and then you try to get into it, it's uncomfortable, you're trying to get in your mouth, and blah, blah, blah. But just make nice little quarter or half-inch diced croutons and saute them in kind of an olive oil, butter, herb, salt, garlic mix.
Hey.
And now they're crunchy and toasty, and then they go right on top of your fresh soup. And oh my, it's asparagus season. I'm all
Twitter paid.
Twitter.
Yeah.
Okay, coming up next in our second hour, it's going to be our Taste of the Week. And Sarah's trying to be the Terry Rotaro of audience motivation, and she's failing miserably. If you'd like to come to be our show and watch Katie fail...
Fail?
Yeah, let's say Katie.
Sarah, sorry.
Yeah, no, Katie.
Like, what's going on here?
Or Tom, now. Stay with us for the second hour of Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. It's Tom Douglas, chef owner, many of Seattle's restaurants, and this cooking school right here, the Hot Stove Society. The chef in the chapeau has ditched us for the hills of Peru.
That's
the
right.
Andes of Peru.
So true.
Do you suppose he's mountain climbing or anything like that, getting a true mountain potato?
I think so. I think he's got his chapeau on. I think mm-hmm. he's hiking around.
Got an oxygen mask and his chapeau on.
Yeah, an oxygen tank trailing behind him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be nice. And I'm Katie. I'm your co-host, and I am excited about hour two of our show mm-hmm. today. We've got a lot of good stuff coming up.
Brittany Bartleben, the pastry chef from the Dahlia Bakery, is going to be here for the Baker's Corner, talking all things spring. We're going to look into your fridge. I think it's okay. Do you guys mind if we look into your fridges? There's nothing to hide.
They're kind of like medium on this response, I feel
well,
like.
I think it's no worse than people looking into my shopping cart when I'm shopping.
That's
it's
true.
The number one sport at the Ballard Market when I'm shopping. I got people that just kind of trail me, and they kind of out of the corner of their eye, they kind of just look into my cart. So I have to hide all the things like the pre-breaded chicken nuggets. I have to hide them under other things.
That's right. Your hidden little secrets. Yeah. I mean, that is a really fun pastime, even for non-famous celebrity chefs, when you're in line at the grocery store to see what someone is offloading mm-hmm. onto the cashier in front of you. You're like, what are they making? Okay, we got some tomatoes. We got some peppers. Maybe they're making a little chicken something or other.
It is a bit of a sport with the cashiers to ask me to look at what I buy and to say, oh, I know what you're making tonight.
I like that game. Yeah, sometimes I guess it. Sometimes I guess correctly.
Nobody ever guesses pot sticker saute. Because I've been known to buy cheap old pot stickers.
I know this about you. Yeah. Linglings, right?
I put them with vegetables and make pot sticker saute. It was one of my daughter's favorite meals.
It's a delicious meal. Yeah. I can see why.
Okay. We also have trivia coming up. Favorite taste of the week.
Favorite taste of the week. I was emceeing the Taste Washington Chef Stage.
When? I looked for you. I couldn't find you.
I wasn't there on Saturday. I had my sister's bridal shower, and there were so many delicious tastes at that bridal shower. Mm-hmm. I will say, what a spread my family made. But when I was at Taste Washington, there was a demo by a chef named May Lin out of L.A. from a restaurant called Nightshade, and she did a congee. And I will say, you know, I've eaten a lot of congee.
I love it.
It never tires, that's for sure. But her version was so delicious. She used some fancy schmancy rice, which who knows if that's really necessary.
Well, it's not fair. Congee's supposed to be day old. extra rice that's all broken down and gross.
But she has a fancy restaurant, so she's doing something a little different. But yeah, you could use anything. It's just a porridge at the end of the day. You could use a brown rice. You could use whatever you have. But really what took it over the top was all of her very thoughtful little accoutrements, including a homemade XO sauce, which was really just a flavor umami bomb. We think of that when we talk about our beloved chili crisp, obviously, but hers was house-made. She made it herself, and just delicious. I mean, so savory. She poached a little quail egg for everybody so that everyone had a little, like, unctuous egg in there. It was good.
Here's the thing about it, doing it, like, by me, like in a Caucasian restaurant. Adrian, our chef down at Seatown, had the most delicious congee on the menu down at Seatown for the longest time, and she happens to be Asian, but it was in kind of a Caucasian setting. And we don't get it. The Caucasians of the world don't get congee in the same way. It's possible deliciousness. You understand what
I do understand. Like, I mean, we had a lot of...
When you see it come around on a dim sum card or something like that, it's not very good.
I think what David Chang really accurately termed in his Netflix series, it's ugly delicious. It's not a very good-looking dish. And, you know, oatmeal's not really a great-looking dish either, but... I think the American palate is more suited, especially during that kind of breakfast brunch hour, that a porridge is sweet. You know, it's got
like
brown
oatmeal,
sugar
right?
and cream. Yeah. And yeah, or like, you know, cream of wheat was something that a lot of people grew up with. Rice puddings
cream
tend to be a little bit...
Cream of a good kind of relationship angle on what congee is to Asians and what cream of wheat is to Caucasians, I would say, is a correct analogy.
Right.
Just kind of... boring unless you add those delicious condiments to it,
and it's a similar viscosity actually too is what I think of, because it's not as thick as say like a steel cut oat. It's a little bit soupier than that, but you know, I know Koreans, Chinese, Japanese growing up, we all had a version of this very
you acquired a taste for it too.
A taste for it, and even from a very young age. So instead of like, you know, just having pureed bananas, my mother would make a version of congee with a dashi instead, and so it had kind of a savory fish broth with kind of fortified with chicken broth as well. And that's just something that we grew up on. And so it's still to this day, I mean, every culture has its comfort food. I would say that that's one of them. Yeah.
And I love it. And that's the thing. I'm odd that way, especially in my family. Can you imagine my family growing up with fish broth and
You know what? Your family should have.
I know they should have.
Because you guys had like how many kids? Like 10, 9, 10 kids?
My taste of the week is green garlic. I was over at the farm putting up some hoop houses with my wife and our Sarah, our farmer in chief. And I looked over and I saw 10 rows of garlic. And I said to him, you know, I love you guys, but that's a lot of garlic. And you know, we don't have time to peel garlic. I know this is cool and everything, but I'm sorry.
We can't wait for the harvest of this.
Well, it's not just the harvest, but you have to dry it then, and then you have to peel it, right?
Yeah.
So it's there's commercial garlic that's delicious and all peeled and ready to go. And in our world, that's the way it has to be. So I went over and we pulled up these green stalks of garlic, and they looked like the size of green onions right now. And I said, why don't we just send them to the restaurants like this? This is the way to use this product. We can start the spring off with a bang. And so we took it right up. We got some. Went to the chicken coop, got a couple eggs, and did green garlic scrambled eggs.
Ooh.
It's so mild and luscious. People think of garlic being that astringent, kind of tough, pungent,
right,
that product. But these were so delicious and like I said, mild and fragrant at the same time. Then for dinner we made green garlic, charred green garlic relish for our pork chops. Really, really good. So I would say if you see it out in the marketplace, typically at farmers markets, pick up some green garlic. Use the entire thing. It looks just like a green onion. Cut the little roots off the end and use it just like you would a green onion. Stir fry, fried rice, you name it. And it's such a beautiful way to begin spring with these nice little garlic stalks.
Delicious.
My mouth started watering just talking about it. So. Ever wonder what to make with port, eggs, and cottage cheese? Don't worry. We're going to figure it out right here. We're going to make meals right out of your fridge on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's time to talk what's in your fridge on the Kitchen Show here. The Seattle Kitchen Show at the Hot Stove Society. We still have a couple of things coming up. The Baker's Corner and Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. We just got word that Bridget Charter's here. The most competitive person I've ever met in my entire life is going to join us for the last segment for the trivia segment. So it should be a fascinating day today.
Rip rollicking.
She's taught cooking for a very long time.
Even some people in our audience have already taken a class from her.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Anyway, what's in your fridge, KDO?
What's in your fridge? This is where we go to our Facebook page, Seattle Kitchen, and we ask you, what's in your fridge? Let us know so that our chefs can make something out of it. Normally, you go back and forth with Thierry Rotero with different fridges, but it's all you, Tom. It's all you alone with these fridges. Oh, my goodness. Let's jump into it. The first one comes from Cassie. Parmesan cheese, oven-roasted potatoes, chicken tenders, lots of condiments, and some biscuits.
Boy, we already talked a little bit about chicken parm today. Let's make some.
Okay.
Yeah? Why not?
Why wouldn't we?
So chicken tenders are generally that little strip that comes off the bottom of the chicken breast that always wants to fall off when you're either pounding it to a paillard or however. So we're just going to – sometimes they sell groups of those in the grocery store, and that sounds like what she has.
That's what I'm assuming.
And so we're going to take that, and we're going to make three little – like 9x12 pans of our dredging material. One is, so you've got the chicken tenders, you've got flour. Now we're going to dust them in flour so that when we then put it into the egg wash, it picks up the egg, the flour does.
That's something to hang on to.
And then our third little dredge is going to be a 50% Parmesan cheese, 50% breadcrumbs.
Ooh, that's a savory mix. I like it.
So... that is so now we've dusted all those. We've made our chicken parms. We've breaded our tenders.
Have you salted or peppered your chicken tenders?
Sure, of course.
Sure, why not?
Everything's seasoned in my house. And in the breadcrumbs, you can put, you know, even if you want to stay trashy. This is a trashy kind of dish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're taking chicken and we're deep frying it. I mean,
basically.
Yeah.
So just put some Italian seasoning. It's a good time to use up all your Italian seasoning and things like that. So now they're set up and ready to be fried.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be pan fried in olive oil. And chicken tenders are super thin. So you can pan fry them and brown them all up. The cheese will brown a little bit. You don't want it to go overboard.
Nope.
We're not looking for like a grilled cheese color, but we are looking for some bronzing.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're all crispy and set aside. Now we take a can of tomatoes because we're allowed to use our pantry, right?
Yeah. Can she says she's got condiments. I assume tomatoes.
Can of tomatoes. We're going to take our immersion blender and kind of puree that up. So just a little bit of onion, a little bit of garlic, tomatoes, and basil.
Simple.
Now we have our tomato sauce. So we layer our chicken tenders into a baking pan.
A little Pyrex. Sure.
Smother them with a little bit of sauce. Finish with more Parmesan cheese on top. And bake until hot all the way through. And now we've got chicken parm.
And
it's going
voila.
To be so delicious. The potatoes you can save for the next day, but that and a little bit of, if you want to make garlic bread out of your biscuits, that'd be easy enough to do. Just make a garlicky biscuit.
Mm.
And then a little bit of salad, and you're set.
That sounds great. I'd like that right now. That sounds so good. All right. Connie's got one of your favorite ingredients of all time. You find it in the fridge. Cottage cheese. You love cottage cheese so much.
Oh, don't I love it.
Yeah, I know. Look at that face. White port, eggs, and lime juice. What can you do with any of that?
Well, this is one of those few fridges where I think you should just gather everything and kind of head to the compost bin and just start fresh. You know, it's asparagus. Have we talked about asparagus yet? It's asparagus season. cottage cheese. You know, my wife loves cottage cheese. She buys those little individual packs and we'll eat it with an apple or something of that nature.
Yeah, I love it.
So, do that. Get an apple, put the cottage cheese on top, pour yourself a little glass of white port, and have at it. I got nothing.
You got nothing. Connie, you're on your own.
Yeah, exactly.
Good luck out there. All right. The next fridge comes from Janet. She's got Mexican cheese, corn tortillas, pork chops, cantaloupe, and baby spinach. That's a good fridge.
Yeah.
You can do something with that.
Mexican cheese, so like cojita?
Cotija, yeah. Cotija, yeah. Or maybe a Mexican fresh cheese. We don't know. Something kind of mild, I would imagine.
Well, we talked a little bit about chilaquile earlier, and I think that's something that people don't make very often because it's a process. But it's easy to do, especially if maybe you have leftover salsa or a can of salsa. So you take your tortillas, and I like to fry them in oil a little bit, not to crisp, but just kind of get them cooked a little bit.
Get them nice and soggy.
Right, and then I will layer those with the cheese and with salsa, my leftover salsa. And if you have it in your freezer, I keep like charred corn from the season. I keep it in my freezer for cornbread, but this would be a nice place to use that in your chilaquiles. Good green pasilla-type chili.
Yum.
And just kind of layer that in there with some tomato, and you are chilaquile heaven. Pork chop. I think she went to my farm and got some green garlic because she did the pork chop with charred green garlic stalks. And baby spinach sautéed. The thing about baby spinach, it doesn't have a lot of flavor, in my opinion. It's
as
got a lot
to,
of
like the
tannin, but not a lot of flavor.
Yeah.
And so I would just wilt it, right? I don't sauté it. Don't cook it down the mush. Just simply put a little bit of bacon fat. You're already having a pork chop, so I know you eat pork. Put a little bit of bacon fat in the pan. Put a little bit of bacon fat in the pan.
Yeah.
And then sauté it quick. Squeeze a lemon. Get it out of there. It shouldn't even be...
It should still kind of look like leaves.
Exactly.
You know, to
it
a
should
certain
just
extent.
Be fresh.
Yeah, that sounds delicious. All right. The next fridge comes from Emily. Camembert cheese, fennel, eggplant, eggs, and red curry sauce.
You know what a TN is? A Tian, T-I-A-N, I believe is how
Tian?
It's spelled.
The French term.
Yeah, that kind of sliced vegetables where you kind of slice them and you put them next to each other in
so
the bit of a row, a fan shape. I like the idea of doing something like that in a pan with the eggplant and the fennel and just kind of roasting them together. You could even take, if you take the rind off the camembert, you can use that as a drip cheese
a
over
crumbly,
top. And
yeah,
it will melt down into
delicious.
Your roasted fennel and eggplant. The red curry sauce and eggs sounds like breakfast the next morning.
Why not?
If you take tomato paste or even red curry sauce, which is typically red curry has got a coconut base, and you put that in the pan like shakshuka, right?
Shakshuka.
You made that before. Just put that in a little ramekin, put it in the bottom, and crack your egg right on top and put it in the oven to bake. It'd be so delicious. A nice little red curry egg.
I would eat that.
So you could do that with your tian if you wanted as your protein.
All right.
Would be good. Up next, it's Brittany Bartleben. She's the pastry chef from the Dahlia Bakery. And we're going to talk about her favorite spring bakes on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. Time for our Baker's Corner with Brittany Bartleben from the Dahlia Bakery right across the street. Getting all ready for Easter bakes.
Oh, yeah.
What's the big thing this Easter?
I'm really excited about our cheesy scalloped potato quiche that we're offering because, to me, I think that would be the perfect accompaniment to your ham and your asparagus.
I've never had scallops and
Neither had I until we just were like, well, let's just try it. And we layered the cheeses in with these lovely, perfectly... par-cooked scalloped potatoes, and it was one of those things where I took a bite and was like, oh, my God, I need a minute. It's absolutely delicious.
Really? So, I mean, I love herbs in my scalloped potatoes, so what did you do for herbage?
Just good old chives.
Just chives.
Yeah, just nice, fresh spring chives.
Scalloped potato quiche.
Mm-hmm. I'm into it. I see you. I get it.
Yeah.
I feel like this is kind of oddly the time of the year that both of these dishes make their way
to
people's tables.
Exactly. Why not have them...
Best of both worlds.
Exactly. We always had scalloped potatoes with our ham dinner.
With Easter, right?
With Easter dinner, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, why not put it in a pie shell?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm.
And sell
it to people.
A
little bit like that Spanish tortilla in a way.
Exactly.
Right?
Which
is the, kind of the egg omelet with the potatoes in it.
Yes, which is a quiche we actually did over the summer when the Padron peppers were really coming in from Prosser. And we just fell in love with the idea of a potato in quiche. And we've done various incarnations of it since.
So now in my scalloped potatoes, I use a ton of browned onions. Is that something is that included in
there? We just did some sweated shallots, but that's, I mean,
Nothing can go wrong with a brown onion.
No, absolutely
that
not.
That's the truth. Yeah. That's real.
All right. So we got quiche for Easter.
We got quiche. And then we've got a really nice carrot bundt cake with a cream cheese glaze on top, which is a little more... I don't know. For some reason, when carrot cake is in bundt cake form, it seems breakfasty and healthy. I don't know.
You've got carrots.
Yes, are full of bologna right
it's
now.
It's practically a salad.
It's in a shape.
Practically a salad. That is so much bologna, but I like it.
It's a really nice little brunchy thing to pick up. And then we've got our rhubarb tart, which is a big seller for Easter. And that's just simple, a little par-cooked rhubarb in a tart shell, and then a really nice cornmeal streusel on top. Pop it in the oven till everything's bubbly and happy, and then you're good. Yeah.
There you go.
And then, of course, we have lemon meringue tart because everyone wants meringue at Easter.
Mm-hmm. And lemon and bright and sunny.
Marshmallowy and fluffy. And
That sounds great. Mm. I feel like the springtime bake is a little underrated compared to, let's say, the holidays, when you see all these like caramels and chocolates and kind of these richer, heavier flavors that we associate with kind of the end of the year. But spring, what a fantastic time, as you're pointing out, the carrot cakes and the spices and the brightness of lemon, and obviously rhubarb.
And also, if I may speak to savory, I'm really excited about using things that are coming from the farm. Like, we just got our first Prosser delivery the other day of the most beautiful green garlic. I'm not sure if Tom's talked about it.
Oh, Tom has talked about the green garlic today.
We're doing something really nice with it over there in the form of our Danish. We took that green garlic and whipped the bejesus out of it with some cream cheese and made a really nice just cream cheese filling. And then we're baking our Danish completely with nothing on it. We're putting like a cannoli mold on top of the dough and then baking it so that when it bakes, there's a little vessel in it. And then when it comes out of the oven, we're piping that cream cheese on it, and then we're taking some pickled asparagus, wrapping it in speck, and just plopping it right on top. And I was trying to recreate this appetizer that my grandmother used to make, and probably everyone's had. It was really big in the 80s and 90s, where you'd take pickled asparagus, smear a piece of ham with cream cheese, and wrap it all up. I just loved those flavors growing up, and so this was more of a little more elevated version of that. And that green garlic, boy, it tastes
like
the best
right
garlic
now?
Bread.
Is this in the bakery?
Today's
right
day
second?
One. So
I will be traveling right across the street after the show is done to grab it.
Not to harp on green garlic too much, but what I thought when I first pulled it out of the ground was, this is such a better green onion.
Exactly. Delicious.
Yeah, it wasn't harsh. It was just very elegant.
No, garlic. It's mild and sweet, but it's everything that's good about garlic, too.
Yeah.
So I wanted to play, too.
That's an interesting thing. I would have to say my parents never made puff pastry with a cannoli mold center and then did green garlic cream cheese with a smoked speck with a German ham with pickled asparagus. You literally said, I think everyone's had this.
Oh, really?
No, not everyone's had this.
You know, whatever, a decent ham and then just plain cream cheese, and then they would buy the pickled asparagus. I can still see the jar in my mind of this jar of pickled asparagus that we always had. My grandma was kind of a foodie.
I could see that. Yeah. She understood flavor combinations.
One of my grandmas was really into homey pies, and the other one was like really trendy foodie.
This is one of my favorite things about the Tom Douglas restaurant world, is that you take kind of these, sometimes even what were a little bit trashy, things that we all grew up loving, and then refining them to something that is far more delicious than any version of it that we've had. The pretzel at Brave Horse Tavern.
The Girl Scout cookie amazement.
Exactly.
Yeah, all these things.
It's one of my favorite things about cooking is taking those beloved food memories and elevating them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If anybody in our audience has a question about spring baking, they're welcome to come up and ask here of Brittany.
Yeah, come on up.
So, let's talk about lamb and bunny cake molds. Are they worth the investment?
I don't think they're worth the investment. I think you can pull off a really cute bunny cake by just baking like a 6-inch round cake and then cutting it in half, flipping it over.
Hump. Go slow.
Okay.
A 6-inch round cake, cut it in half horizontally.
No. Vertically.
No, vertically.
So, when it's like a hump.
Oh, now it's got ears.
It's just like a hump. Like, And then you frost that and coat it in coconut and then stick some like fondant ears or some chocolate ears in it, and you totally have a what passes as a bunny, in my opinion.
Do you guys believe that for 1 second?
There's some dubious sounds.
I will send Sarah a picture of my bunny cake. We can put it on the Facebook page. But once you see it, it's like, oh, I don't need to buy a mold.
No, I could see where you cut that cake in half and it becomes two ears and you use a round regular cake for the body.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And then maybe another two kind of sticking out for the legs.
You're making a lot of cake, though, at that point.
Well, if you do the method, my method, you'll have two bunnies worth of a cake because you're going to cut a cake in half.
Some people like to come to my house for brunch.
That's true.
Maybe
you entertain.
Maybe you have issues that way.
You're an entertainer.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, no, I don't think
so. Always coconut for your bunny.
I think so. And I love coconut this time of year, too. Mm. And it sort of replicates that floofy bunny look.
You making a lot of marshmallow?
We used to do peeps. They're not my favorite thing in the world. I know some people love them.
I like to build a big fire in the fireplace. I put my chicken peeps on a stick, and then I have chick on a stick.
Well, have you ever heard of peep jousting?
Peep jousting? No.
Peep jousting. It's where you take two peeps and you stick little sticks in them and you put them in the microwave and then they blow up and they whichever one hits the other one first is the winner of the joust.
The cool thing about the fireplace and the marshmallow is that it brulees the outside of the chick and then it burns your face off when you try to put it in your mouth because
that's the best way to do a marshmallow.
The best toasted marshmallow.
I like to light it on fire.
Yeah.
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 Yum.
Sean says we have 2 minutes left.
We'll do another marshmallow show.
A whole
what is it with
show,
marshmallows? Yeah. I mean, fancy marshmallows are a big deal these days.
I know.
Them for lots of money.
Yeah.
I bought my sister a little marshmallow thing. I got to the register. I was at Met Market. It's like $29.
You're kidding me.
No. It was just a little thing.
I'm into the marshmallows having a resurgence because they're like a blank slate. You could do Earl Grey tea marshmallow.
Right.
But isn't
it all corn syrup based? Isn't the corn syrup not supposed to be in our diet?
I don't put corn syrup in my marshmallows.
Okay, how do you make a marshmallow?
It's just sugar that I cook to. I'm going to have to remind or email you and let you know what the temperature is. But you're basically going to softball.
Okay.
And then you add gelatin to it, transfer it to the mixer, and just whip it. And add a nice vanilla, because I think that's what separates our marshmallows from a crappy grocery store one. And a lot of salt.
And salt.
I don't put eggs in my marshmallows, but a good vanilla and salt, I think, really makes a nice marshmallow that replicates the Jet Puff.
And how long do they last?
Forever.
In a tight container?
In a tight container,
it'll sweat or get funky?
No. I mean, you want to have it in a cool, dry place. Uh-huh. But, yeah, they'll last a long
time. I think, going back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, the Tom Douglas Restaurant Group and taking kind of a trashy thing and making it spectacular, mm-hmm. there is a huge textural difference when it comes to your Jet Puff marshmallow that you're used to having from the grocery store in the bag versus one that you make yourself. They're a little bit more dense, as you're saying. You can add kind of delicious flavors. Mm-hmm. Yes, a very good vanilla, but there are a lot of other really great natural flavors that are out there that you can add to marshmallows.
Fennel pollen. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of obsessed with fennel pollen, mm-hmm. especially this time of year. Fennel pollen marshmallow just sounds delicious.
Okay. I imagine you can make a cocoa marshmallow as well.
We only have 30 seconds. I want to ask, is vanilla still worth the price?
Yes, and I think we should do another show on how we can extend your vanilla beans.
Okay.
Yes.
Because it is crazy right now.
It's crazy. And honestly, pastry chefs and bakeries, we're just kind of eating the price.
Uh-huh.
And, it's pretty
insane. A vanilla
bean
in the grocery store right now, one bean is around $15.
Yes. I believe they've quadrupled in price over the last while. So, yeah.
Well, so it's still worth it to you.
Yes, it is.
Well, then let's talk after the show, see if it's still worth it to me. No, just kidding. We're going to jump into Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. When we come back, Chef Bridget Charters is going to join us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back.
I did the thing. I got it all.
Nice job, Sarah.
Thanks.
It's Food for Thought Tasty Trivia time here at the Hot Stove Society, the Seattle Kitchen Show. We are going to invite Chef Bridget Charters, one of the instructors here at the Hot Stove.
Hi, Tom.
One of the fine instructors here.
Mm.
Yes. So this young lady over here said she took your Masa Master's class.
Yes, thanks.
Yeah.
Tons of fun.
It's been on the docket here since we opened four and a half years ago.
I could stand to take that class. I could learn
it's fun.
A thing or two.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we do here, right?
We loosen you up with margaritas, get people to relax.
As if I needed the loosening, but okay. I hear you.
All right. Katie, what you got for us? Or Sarah, are you going to do it? Or yeah,
Sarah's going to do it. It's time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. This is where we, the three of us, are going to go toe-to-toe, and Sarah, our producer, is going to administer the quiz. Sarah, I will hand it over to you now.
That's right. And today we are playing for Kathy and Mark, who are in the audience and are celebrating their anniversary.
Yay! Hey,
where are they? Let's look at them.
They're in the back.
Wow, happy anniversary. Yeah. That's nice.
So, should you lose, whoever it is, you have to give something to Kathy and Mark.
Anniversary gift. It has to be big and important.
I know. You have to. We don't know which anniversary it is. You know, we can't go off of the diamond or whatever, which probably works out well.
Okay.
So, Tom, what are you going to give away, should you lose?
Well, for an anniversary, I think you have to have kind of a sexy dinner for two or something like that, or for four, whatever you're into.
No judgment from Tom.
Nope.
Keeping things
spicy.
So
I'm going to do dinner for two at the Palace Kitchen. We're open late night there. It's great for after movies, say. Go to the Cinerama and have a little dinner after the movie at the Palace Kitchen because we're open until 1 a.m. for dinner.
That's nice.
That does sound $100
gift card.
So we have a really fun fish class coming up in June that we've just loaded, and I can get you the dates. It'd be great to have you guys come to that because it's there's some hands-on there, and we work on pan-searing fish and grilling and... Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fish fillet for lovers. That's nice.
What are you going to give, KDO?
You know, who doesn't like to celebrate their anniversary with a little sweet treat? So how about a $50 gift card to Molly Moon's? You can come and get all the ice cream or just load up your freezer with ice cream and take a bunch of pints home and eat it on the couch.
Watch Netflix and chill.
Yeah, exactly.
The perfect romantic date.
Yeah, that is romantic. Yeah. I think so.
All right, well, let's get going then, now that we have these wonderful prizes on the line. Who's going first?
I'll go first, since we'll be nice to Bridget.
All right. So, Katie, your first question. Which food contains the most sugar, a lemon or a strawberry?
I'm going to say the lemon. I'm going to say it's very tart, but it has a lot of sugar.
Yes, that is correct. A lemon has 1.5 grams. A strawberry has 0.6.
Hey.
Yay.
Nice. Brûlée lemon. Delicious. Yeah.
All right, question number two. What are the specs of a Julian cut? Is it 1/8 an inch by 1/8 an inch by 1/8 an inch, 1/8 an inch by 1/8 an inch by 2 inches, 1/4 inch by 1/4 inch by 6 inches, or it just means a small strip?
I would think it means a small strip.
No, it actually is 1/8 an inch by 1/8 an inch by 2 inches. They're very specific.
By 2 inches?
By 2 inches.
I have been julienning incorrectly for many years.
Ruler out while you do it?
Well, I would just say
Did you ever watch that movie with Julia Child and her on her onions, or Julian onions?
Julia and Julia?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I didn't pay attention. Yeah. Sorry.
All right. Here. It's okay. You've got 1 out of 2 so far. Your third question. Which food was once used as a currency? Chocolate, sweet potatoes, salt, or all of the above?
All of the above.
That is correct, yes.
High-priced items.
Yes, all of them. Which type of wood should you not use for smoking foods on an outdoor grill? Softwoods, hardwoods, or fruitwoods?
Hardwood.
It's actually softwood.
It's softwood! Yeah. Dang it. I don't do a lot of smoking, obviously.
Yeah, they release resins that taint the food's taste.
Tainted food. No good.
Delicious. Softwoods are kind of like pine and, you know.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Cedar. Cedar's spruce. Another one that gets kind of stinky.
Well, Katie, your final question. You've got 2 out of 4.
Doing not that great, but go on. Sure.
How much does the world's most expensive pizza cost? Is it $250? $4,200 or $1,200?
I'm going to say, unfortunately, I think maybe $12,000.
Yeah, that's correct.
Wow. What's on it?
It's topped with buffalo mozzarella, 3 types of caviar, lobster from Norway, and Sorrento, and it is lightly dusted with hand-picked grains of pink Australian sea salt from the Murray River. So
what?
Whatever.
That's not $12,000 worth of pizza.
Where is this sold?
Somewhere in Italy. Though they say they actually only will do it if you have to let them come to your house, and they will make it in your house for you.
So it's labor. They're charging you for their very important labor.
Yeah, to make that very fancy 72.
All right.
Well, you didn't do too bad, Katie. 3 out of 5.
I mean, it's better than failing.
Showing. Yeah.
Yay.
All right, Bridget, ready to go?
I'm ready.
Okay. Your first question. A finely chopped mixture of cooked mushrooms, onion, and herbs is called what?
Duxelles.
Yes, that is correct.
Ooh.
Hello.
True. Quick. Yes. True or false? Clarified butter has a higher smoke point than regular butter.
Correct. True.
Yes, that is correct.
Don't you want to think about it a little bit?
No.
Bridge us out for blood right now.
You might have to think about this next one. For what reason were tea bags originally made? A. British soldiers made them to carry tea into battle with them. A bit of home to go with them. B. For sending tea samples. They somehow gained popularity as a method for brewing after that. Or C. Chinese noblewomen wanted a cleaner and more sophisticated way to make tea while traveling.
I'm guessing A.
No, it's actually B.
What?
It was, yeah. Long pastas are best with cream sauces or olive oil. The redder the sauce, the longer the pasta should be. Or long pasta goes well with any sauce.
I say A.
You're right.
Whatever happened to spaghetti?
You know,
fettuccine. Exception to every rule, I guess.
Yeah, spaghetti. It's always one. All right, your final question. What do fugu, brain mushrooms, and elderberries all have in common?
They're wild and foraged.
Well, I had they can all kill you if they're prepared properly.
That's the bigger that's the bigger one.
Yeah. Well, Katie, you and Bridget, you guys have tied for now. Let's see if Tom does better or worse. We'll go from there. All right, Tom, you feel ready?
I fell asleep. That took so long.
What?
Oh, what a drama queen. Right, well, let's see how well you
we'll
do.
We'll speed it up for you.
Yeah.
All right. What should you look for when buying fresh mussels?
The shell should be closed.
Yes, that is correct. What is the official name for a cluster of bananas? Is it a hand, a bundle, or a bushel?
I'm going to go with a hand.
That's correct, yeah. The individual ones are called fingers. Mm-hmm. What degree of heat is required for smoking meat?
Well, that's a personal choice. Typically, though, when you look at the... around 225 is a very typical number.
Sorry, what did you say?
Around 225 is a very typical number.
What I found was between 150 and 200 degrees.
Yeah, I find 225 is right there.
All right, Bridget's saying no. Katie, what do you think?
I go with Bridget. No, definitely.
Right. Oh!
Sorry, Tom. When doubling a recipe, which of the following should you never double? Flour, water, or alcohol?
Tom always doubles his alcohol.
I'm going to say water.
No, it's alcohol.
That's ridiculous.
Apparently, it can affect the flavor to have more alcohol added to different dishes. You have one more question coming up. Let's see if you can break the tie you're in right now with Katie and Bridget. Gaufret potatoes are actually what? Waffle fries, tater tots, curly fries, or mashed potatoes?
They're so good.
They're so crispy. Yeah. And I don't like them sogged out later. Waffle fries.
Yes, that is correct.
Tom is the winner.
They used
Tom
to have them at Seatown with like a little Old Bay seasoning. Yep. Delicious. Yes.
All right, there's a little playoff between the two of you.
That's
hand
right.
slaps.
All right, Tom, you going to be watching?
Yep.
Okay. What's the correct ratio of oil to vinegar in a classic vinaigrette? Bridget.
3-1.
Yes, that is correct.
Wow.
I guess that makes Katie the what?
Loser. But that makes our anniversary couple in the back winners. $50 gift card to Molly Moon's Homemade Ice Cream.
Absolutely. Yay. If you want to be a winner, you can come and be part of our show. Send us a note on Facebook or Twitter, or come right down and buy a ticket at the Hot Stove Society. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by Large Media. That's L-A-R-J Media. Our lead producer is Sarah Leibovitz, and our sound engineer is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. If you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy a ticket for only $15. It comes with breakfast. And remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can subscribe to our podcast through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or download the Cairo Radio app and search for Seattle Kitchen.
Have a great weekend.